Welcome back to Red Ice. This is Henrik here. Thank you for joining us, everybody. We are going to dive into some of the major stories that have been developing here. Actually, they've been developing for some time. Some of the stories we want to address. There's a number of important issues that we can spend a significant amount of time on picking apart, trying to get to the bottom of. And, you know, we'll run through some of these here later. But this is going to be an interesting show here, so definitely make sure you stay tuned. Our guest joining us to kind of break down some of these breaking news stories is Professor Kevin MacDonald from the Occidental Observer. He's, of course, the academic that largely, to a large extent, goes unnotarized, unmentioned, I should say, when it comes to talking about the various European advocacy groups out there, because he, of course, brings an academic and professional aspect to the movement. So much of the criticism that's aimed towards the, as I said, the European advocacy groups, they pretend Kevin doesn't exist. I believe many actually know about him, but they don't really want to address him and talk about him for that reason. But good to have you back again, Kevin. Thank you for coming on again.
It's great to be here, Henrik. And we certainly live in very exciting times. Lots to talk about.
Exactly. And that's where I almost am kind of uncertain where to begin. But let's do this. Let's actually just address the issue of Hollywood first, because this has been an issue I wanted to bring you on actually a couple of weeks ago and dive into this and discuss it in some detail. I know that you've written on it, too. Of course, it's Harvey Weinstein. These are basically issues that seems to have been more or less, as they say, an open secret. Many people have been knowing what's been going on for a long time. They've accepted this kind of behavior. It seems to be part of an undercurrent within the Hollywood establishment. And I think what Weinstein is involved in is absolutely nothing new. It seems to have deeper roots, and it's kind of seems that this has had a somewhat of a domino effect when a lot of women are coming out and going after not only Weinstein, but actually other men within Hollywood, even politicians and stuff like that. What's your initial reaction to just knowing what you know about Hollywood and that kind of subculture and hearing about the Weinsteins and things like this?
Well, it certainly has a very long history, going back to the 1920s at least. There's a recent film called about Dalton Trumbo, the screenwriter, who was blacklisted in the 1950s as a result of McCarthy things. And in that, they had this little scene with Louis B. Mayer. This is from the 1940s. And he was, you know, chasing around these women, and famously, probably hundreds of them I've seen. So it goes back really to the founding of Hollywood. Harvey Weinstein is in this long tradition, very dishonorable tradition, of using power. These guys have powers of life and death over careers. And so they can basically dictate these things, and they can get what they want. And so many actors and actresses, especially actresses in the case of Weinstein, they're basically prostitutes. I mean, they will do anything for their career. And, some of them, of course, aren't happy about it, and they were raped and everything else. It's just an incredible story. In my article, I emphasized two different things. And the article, you had a headline up there a while ago from the Tablet. And,
yes.
And they emphasized there, that this motive of revenge, like, you know, Jews have been persecuted all these years, and so. And there's something to that. I mean, I'm not saying that there was real persecution, but I'm saying that is the Jewish perception, that Jews have this image of our culture as having persecuted Jews for thousands of years, basically. You know, they go back to the Holocaust, the Middle Ages, the Tsar, all of these things. So they have this idea of revenge. It's not hard to find that. And that was how it was interpreted in the Tablet. But I also talk about domination, that there's this push for dominating the non-Jews in the society. So these women are sort of a trophy almost, for it shows their power, their ability to command this sort of thing, which, you know, is something that from an evolutionary point of view, men do want to do, and powerful men have use their power to get access to women throughout history. So it's not abnormal or something, but this is a desire specifically to dominate these Gentile women. And that is, so again, two things, I think, this feeling of hatred and revenge over the history of Jewish-Gentile relationships, and also this, just desire for power and domination. These people do have power, and they dominate the film and the media industry.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, he had a very attractive, a beautiful goy wife, a shiksa, shall we say. But that doesn't seem to have been enough. Is there anything that can be read, if I can put it that way, from the victims? I think one of them were Jewish. I don't know if he knew that. One that's come out, I forget her name now, but she was one of the accusers, if you will, or you know, she was accusing him, rather. But is there anything else we can read from the actresses? Or did he, do you think, go after, like, anything he could, like anything with two legs and the right gender?
Certainly, the vast majority were not Jewish. I think that's the main story here. There are just hundreds, probably, of victims here. And then, I understand, at least six rapes now. Six accusations of rape. It's going to be a very serious thing. And they're going, I think there will be prosecutions and certainly civil lawsuits. There's been one $5 million lawsuit by a woman in Los Angeles, I believe. And there'll be more. I mean, they're going to go after this. Once this all comes out, then it's a feeding frenzy because, you know, it's not hard to get a lawyer who's going to go for a civil judgment. But all these women are saying the same thing, basically.
Now, before we, and I do want to obviously criticize Weinstein, both the brothers. I want to criticize Hollywood because we know about the acting couches who say this is basically a machine that chews up young, beautiful women that want to make it, right? Yeah. That are ultimately, I believe, driven by partially a genetic interest, right? That they haven't this idea that the more they can be known, the more out there they will be, that will enable them to pick and choose when it comes to husbands and things like this, right? I think there's a biological drive for them wanting to be famous, right? So they are in a position to take advantage of this. So I don't want to downplay what has happened in any regard, but what I've seen immediately also as a counter reaction is that this seems to be almost, for example, the tag Me Too, right, that was trending on Twitter in the wake of this, even spread to Sweden, where a lot of these women were going after every guy that they could, basically, right? That it was like again, it was one of those domino effects where basically they seem to jump on the occasion and say, see, it's the patriarchy's fault. We got to go after men. Is there any danger in deflecting it in the wrong direction, do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think there is. It is a perennial problem for women because they are the sought-after sex. I mean, this basic evolutionary theory, women are the high-investment sex, men are the low-investment sex, and so women are sort of the prize of the mating game. Throughout history, as I said before, I mean, powerful men, wealthy men have had harems, and you still see that in the Muslim world. And even in our world, you see, you know, serial polygamy, you see wealthy men being able to command sexual relations with a lot of women. I mean, that's just the reality, but it's something that we frown on. And when it's against the will of the woman, then it's rape or close to it. And, so that's something that is against the law and should be against the law. I do think that something will happen here. I think he will get prosecuted.
Yeah, definitely. I think there's a lot of things that seems to be unfolding at once. And not only are, of course, women being targeted in this, as we know from previous testimony, including some of the actresses themselves, it seems to extend even into some of the pedophile rings, Kevin. And this is an even more disturbing aspect. I mean, we have the testimony of someone like Corey Feldman, for example, that for years have talked about that some of the very powerful Hollywood moguls were actually abusing him, and he claimed that this is one of the reasons why his friend and co-actor in some movies, Corey Haim, actually ended up killing himself. He went on drugs, of course. He had a very difficult life after this. But, I mean, there's even known directors that still are actually working in Hollywood. One of the guys, Silva, I forget his first name, he produced the Jeepers Creepers series. He's a convicted pedophile, and he still is receiving tasks in Hollywood to do films. How prevalent do you think that aspect is in all of this?
I think it's pretty prevalent. John Travolta came out a while ago saying pretty much the same thing that these boy actors, you know, teenage actors or even younger, are getting sodomized and so on by these Hollywood producers. It's a pervasive thing, and the only difference is that they're gay, so they want a different kind of sex, but they have that power, and they use it. And very unscrupulous sad. And yeah, I can see it destroying lives, especially if the person being victimized has no tendencies toward being gay, and that's the case for the vast majority of people. They're going to, you know, suffer from this dramatically. They just be horrible.
Yeah, definitely. So let's return to Weinstein a little bit there, too, then, and talk about him. As you said, there was this one article out of the foreword, and he was speaking about a very, I guess, an interesting to me subculture, really, where he seemed to know a lot about this and kind of reveal. He references Philip Roth, for example. Do you know anything about that author, Philip Roth?
Oh, Philip Roth, yeah. I mean, I read Portnoy's Complaint in the 1960s shortly after it came out, and it's a stunning book. But frankly, you know, back in the 60s, I wasn't so aware of Jewish issues, even though this was prototypically a Jewish book. This was about his complaint, you know, and his desire for shiksas, you know, these non-Jewish women. And what was so striking about it, he talked about, you know, having sex with their backgrounds. It was this domination thing. Wanting to, because they had come over in the 17th century, they were the descendants of Puritans, their family was rich. Those were the real prizes. It wasn't, you know, finding some hooker who was not Jewish. It was finding, you know, high class, high status women and then abusing them, basically. I mean, he had these very abusive sex scenes, which I recount in the article, which I almost hate to talk about, but, you know, where he's sort of making them, this woman do sexual acts with another woman and just all this really debasing stuff. And, you know, it's really a matter of degrading the other woman, showing your power, and, you know, where the woman is seen as something to be conquered, as the spoils of a war that you are engaging in against these waspy, you know, well-off, Harvard-educated types. I mean, that's the thing, to go after the high-status women. You have, you know, if you can do that and get them to you know, perform sexual acts with you, you have arrived. And that's what Harvey Weinstein is all about. I mean, it's not just any woman. He could get any woman he wants. I mean, anybody can. You can get a prostitute, call him whatever. But this is about getting someone who's beautiful, who's famous. I mean, you know, Angelina Jolie was involved, Gwyneth Paltrow. There's all these really famous, beautiful women, you know, so it's not something the average man could even dream of. They want it.
And so he's in a position where he can decide and basically say he can make or break careers, and he used this, of course, right, to his advantage and said, you know, basically, you don't know me. Like, you just, this is common. Women do this. They give me a massage or whatever, and he pushes his way, you know, onto them. In some cases, he did weird things, such as masturbating into a plant and things like this.
Yeah, I mean, it's very strange stuff. The guy's just perverted. I mean,
yeah, some very
do things like, yeah, masturbating in front of women and things like that. Yeah, but it's a way of debasing these women, and I think it's really all about power for him. It's not just about sex. But you can imagine it sort of gets conflated. You know, that would be extremely arousing for him to have some beautiful, famous movie star willingly engage in sex with him, or even not, and be able to have the power that if you do something like rape another woman, rape a woman, that would never get reported. She would never accuse you. And no one is going to ever, you know, even complain about it. You will retain your power, your wealth, and everything else, and it'll just keep on going. That's power for you. Be able to rape at least six women and just walk. I mean, that's amazing.
Well, it did catch up with him, though.
It caught up finally. Yeah, and this now, is after 30 is. Years. He's
exactly.
65 years old.
Yeah.
Amazing. I mean, you know, it's been going on since the 80s, so this is a long time.
Definitely, definitely. You know, some people speculate it might be a power struggle behind the scenes between him and, I believe, his brother Bob. I think it's Bob.
Yeah.
But who knows?
Although
right?
He's been accused too, you know.
I wouldn't be surprised.
At least a couple of women. Yeah, his brother Bob was accused.
Yeah. So I wonder why he's being thrown to the wolves. That's always interesting to ask that question of, like, why is it coincidental? Is it just, you know, just happens to be or what? I mean, but it is indicative also of, I believe there was a lot of media outlets that actually knew about this. So they had stories on the back burner for years in some cases. And these are these liberal progressive outlets that refuse to mention something right. because they were, you know, he was a Clinton donor. He even said in this weird letter after the initial accusations came out that it's like, whoa, you know, like, hang on, I know I did something wrong, but I'll use all my power and finances to go after Trump. Remember that?
Yeah.
I'll do the right thing. Don't worry.
Well, I think that's the big message here is that this was a product of this Jewish subculture in Hollywood. And these people have been preaching to us for decades. But anyway, how many Holocaust movies have there been? How many movies that have been scripted from a very liberal point of view, especially since the 1960s, but even before that? So they've been, and they're always couched in, you know, in these moral terms. You have to be a good person, empathic, and all that. And here we, the fundamental to this culture that's been going on really for 100 years is exploitation, power being used to extort things from people. This is something I don't see how anybody can take them seriously when they go up and moralize. I mean, you look at the Oscars, all these actors, all these producers are going out there and they're doing things. Well, now they're condemning Trump. But way before that, they were condemning everything else that was illiberal in their speeches. I mean, in, you know, liberal Hollywood is a cliche. Well, it's a truth. Yeah. I mean, there's huge truth there. And it's all about moral preaching. I just hope that the average person sort of starts getting the message. These people are hypocritical. They have no morals, and they're just extremely unempathic. It's really a hostility towards the traditional people and culture of America.
That's right. They've never believed, I think. Well, maybe some of them do, but in the base liberal progressive message of, to a certain extent, victimhood, but also of helping the helpless, so to speak, that in itself has never been about the issue. They have pushed this thing because it's, you know, it's the morals of the times, it's the right thing to do, and therefore they can advance their own objectives by claiming that there are these good-hearted people and, you know, support us and listen to us and all this stuff. But, you know, again, I want people to understand also that Hollywood is such a powerful machine that they're the ones who've been giving us, feeding us with the moral picture of how we should live and be as human beings for many, many, many years now. And if this is the undercurrent, the underbelly of this machine, then that speaks volumes, I think, Kevin, about you know what it is that they've been pushing on us all these years, right?
Yeah. And you know, the reality is the mainstream Jewish community has been associated with the left throughout the entire, you know, ever since I got here. They've been associated with the left and oftentimes the far left. We talked about the fact that for someone like Weinstein, it's really about power over these women. Well, the entire message of the Jewish left has been to change the people that run this country, to change the elites, whether it's civil rights and affirmative action, all the pro-minority programs that have happened. Really what's going on, the population displacement as a result of massive immigration, what's really going on is the disempowerment of white people. And so, you know, in a way that this is a symptom of that. It's even more, it's more important in a way than sexual exploitation of a bunch of women. I mean, that's important, and it's cruel, and it's horrible. But what's even worse is that we are being stripped of our power, and it's the same kind of moralism that really stands behind it all the time. I mean, these messages that support the white dispossession are always, almost always, phrased in terms of moral imperatives. Well, these guys are really good at that, but it's really all about power. It always has been. And Hollywood's just an example of that.
Yeah, definitely. So for those that are new to your work, that might be tuning in for the first time and might say, whoa, what are you talking about? Like, you're getting ahead of yourself here. What do you mean that this is some specific Jewish aspect to this, right? Let's just return to the Tablet Mag piece for a little bit. And because it's really Mark Oppenheimer, the author, that opens this up to us for those that are, you know, unfamiliar with this, what he claims. Listen to the first paragraph here. At first squint, Harvey Weinstein seems like a very familiar type. Isn't he the old, same old, another rich, entitled, powerful man with a bad dye job, abusing his might to coerce women into sex? Isn't Harvey just like Roger Ailes or Bill O'Reilly, or for that matter, Bill Clinton? But look at the details of the case and you'll see that the answer is no. Harvey is different.
Right.
Harvey, sadly, is a deeply Jewish kind of pervert. There was a, right. obviously, a just to note that, there was a, an apology piece written to this afterwards as well, because there was a tremendous uproar, and I guess I can understand it since it was published on Tablet Magazine. I was surprised to see the piece there, to be honest. But
what I was too. I was shocked.
What is he talking about? What is this about? Break that down for us. What is Oppenheimer speaking about here?
Well, everybody, you know, the fact is Hollywood is a specifically Jewish culture. I mean, it has been dominated by Jews since the 1920s. And this is often misstated by Jewish writers. I mean, it's well known in terms of ownership of studios, in terms of Hollywood producers, the people with the power have been Jews. And, you know, certainly some producers and a lot, you know, probably most of the actors and actresses, in fact, certainly the most of the actors and actresses have not been Jewish, but they don't really have the power. And if you have someone, say, like Martin Scorsese, Tarantino, who are not Jewish, the fact is that these people could not, you know, upset the apple cart. If they did, they would be out. And so it's as if what I would say is that Jews have sort of veto power over what goes on, the messages that come out of Hollywood. You are not going to see a movie that portrays the alt-right in a positive light. You will have many, many movies portraying Jews in a good light, portraying blacks in a good light. But you're not going to have anybody explicitly white really portrayed in a positive way. I like that you have The Empire of Their Own by Neil Gabler, a famous book, just showing, I mean, that you know, Jews dominated Hollywood from the beginning, and they have not given up that. They're not going to give it up without some kind of a big struggle. You know, it's funny because the L.A. Times, I used to live in that area, I read it. They would, every year at the Oscars, they would have an article saying, why is Hollywood so white? We have to get more non-whites in.
Yeah.
And it was always a joke. Because they knew darn well the people that had power were Jewish, and that article appears every year because it doesn't change. It never changes, and that's unlike so many other areas where they force people to hire other people just to make it more diverse and so on. You're not going to see people demanding that ownership of these studios and so on be by non-Jews. I mean, it's just not going to happen.
Right. Did he have something in him that pushed him in a direction of where he attained this role, if you will, as a very powerful Hollywood mogul because he had these kinds of drives and motives? Or are these kinds of drives and motives and this behavior a side effect? I mean, this is difficult for you. This is about the deeper psychology of the man or what drives him. It's difficult, but I'm just curious. Or do you think that he's driven by having that power as a Hollywood mogul to spread that morality, to spread the political message, to use this culture in this didactic fashion, and then he just happens to be a pervert on top of it? Is there any distinction between these two for this man, do you think?
Well, I do think he's a Jewish type. I'm not saying that by any means that all Jews are like this, but there's a certain type of Jew who is like this, I would say. And in particular, I'm talking about the fact that he's extremely aggressive. I mean, it wasn't just the sexual exploitation of women. He's yelling at everybody and just really abusive towards people on the set, of the movies. Anybody he dealt with, basically, that he had power over, was treated very poorly and often yelling and screaming and, you know, just not a very abusive boss anytime you know, whatever the topic was. And so I'm sure he abused men psychologically as much as he abused women psychologically and sexually. The fact is that the Jews are often, you know, the stereotype is that they are very aggressive. And there's some research support for that. I've summarized a couple of places. Personal drive and intensity. People have said he's very talented when it comes to, you know, seeing what can work on the screen, what can make some money and all that. But, you know, you combine that, and that you show him there with Quentin Tarantino, I mean, oh, Quentin Tarantino. He is so bad. He's the kind of guy that these producers, Jewish producers, say, yeah, these are the non-Jews we want here. I mean, he hates white America. And that's the kind of guy who gets ahead. You know, if you had someone with our sensibility about things, it would never get anywhere in Hollywood.
Yeah, it's a very interesting, you know, trying to understand what it is that drives these guys. And just also, as you said, he's been praised for his ability to, you know, spread these dramatic stories and stuff like that. But, you know, again, I wonder if it's all for show. He might be just be one of these sociopathic individuals that are basically like, he knows how to manipulate emotions and stuff like that and very good at it, you know. But I think that the pushiness, I think, is something which is a unique trait.
The pushiness is what you're talking about. Yeah,
because, I mean, I'm not saying that he didn't violently get on top of a woman and holding her down and raping her. I'm not saying that didn't happen. But it seems primarily the method was to push his way, like, you know, a little bit more. No, I'll take off my robe. I'll lay down here. I'll do this, I'll do that. And eventually he got his way, right? So this trait of being extremely pushy is something which, of course, which I think has benefited in Hollywood, because in the white American culture, I believe that there is a much greater courteousness, shall we say, there. And one of the reasons why maybe some of these individuals have ended up in the power position that they have is simply because other people have backed down. They haven't been able to keep up with it. There was one piece I read about his partners. I apologize that I forget his name now, but he eventually he fled, as they said in the article, into theater instead and up to New York to get away from Harvey.
Really?
Because after working just on a couple of movies with him, He was exhausted and just burnt out, and he couldn't keep up with the abusiveness of this guy, and he basically burnt him out and ruined this guy, and I mean that's a unique drive, and maybe a Harvey Weinstein is even more driven so than your average Jewish person would be.
He's on the extreme end, and I totally agree. He's a sociopath because you know, you can't possibly have empathy for these people. You know, if you're raping them and then walking away and using your power in that way. I mean, you just can't. That's what a sociopath does. You don't have guilt. That's what a definition. And I think he started out, you know, slow with these women. You know, he'd take his, you know, show, maybe ask for a massage or something like that. And if the woman is willing, then everything goes well and it's all consensual. But then if it doesn't, in an awful lot of time, he forced his had his way, but forcibly. So, but when when you're talking about rape, that means she doesn't want it. That means she is suffering. You are not concerned about that. That's a sociopath.
All right, very interesting. So we'll see what happens with this, and we'll see if other things can be unrattled or unlocked because of this, because it seems to be, as I said, spreading to other directors, other actors, other people that are involved, other people that have protected him and ultimately known that, well, he's a powerful figure, so if I back him up or stand up for him or whatever, you know, I'll get a piece of that action and kind of thing. But it's interesting because Hollywood, again, as such a powerful mechanism, it seems that its power is really on what do you call it, loose footing at this point due to these kinds of things. And we have other newer independent, you know, production methods popping up and things like this. Do you think this could lead to like the death of Hollywood eventually?
Well, I think there'll always be entertainment, but there are more voices now. You know, things like Netflix, for example, they have a huge budget for programming, and that, as far as I know, is not controlled by Jews. And, but, you know, when they look for creative talent, you know, they're going to be looking at a lot of the same producers. I mean, I have Netflix, and when you look at that, it seems like an awful lot of Jewish producers are involved, Jewish screenwriters and so on. So, I don't see anything changing dramatically here. And something like Netflix, you know, they know, what can and can't be said these days. So I don't see a big change there. But I do think that, you know, and I would hope that the moralizing message that Hollywood has been producing for decades, people start to question that. That is just something, realize the hypocrisy, realize it's about power, and at a deeper level, you know, really start getting into why are these people doing this? This is not just an accident that they're liberal. These people reflect the values of the mainstream Jewish community, which had always been to the left of the non-Jewish community in America. At least the non-Jewish white population of America. So this is something that we have to really pound home, that this is hypocrisy, that it's more, you know, it's way more than Harvey Weinstein. We talked about the pedophiles, but also there are a lot of other producers now that are being accused. There's one guy named Tobach, he's been accused by over 200 women. It's amazing. Brian Singer is a producer, well-known producer in Hollywood, of all these absolutely obscene parties with young boys. I mean, it's just terrible what goes on. So I think that people are going to wonder a little bit about some of these messages. And there's so much Trump hate, for example, from these people. And it's just so hypocritical.
I know.
Remember when they released this tape of Trump doing some exploitation last year, and these people in Hollywood are condemning him right and left. And they know damn well it was what Harvey Weinstein was doing. Please, it's just...
That's right. People made the joke, right? Trump talked about grabbing the pussy, but Harvey actually did it. It's amazing, the hypocrisy. And then it was all about women. Oh my God, he's a women hater and stuff. And now there's still people defending Harvey. They're not in a good position doing so, but they're still doing it. It was pretty amazing. But
they're still doing it.
Yeah, the pedophile angle is very interesting. And exactly, I think we should look at this as warfare. This is ammunition for us to break down the credibility of Hollywood, and that's why it's so important to focus on it. I mean, as a cultural phenomenon, Hollywood is obviously an enemy to those that come from a perspective of having a European advocacy. We know that. That's very fundamental of what they do. You know, that's they have basically managed to take over the storytelling process, and they've spread their morality worldwide. I mean, this is not only America. This is Europe, and it's in other parts of the world, outside of the Western world. And they've been so powerful for such a long time. And I agree with you. I think that, unfortunately, the Netflixes are not much better. In some cases, they're actually even worse if you look at the programming.
Terrible things in there.
Horrible.
And that's the thing. They all conform to that culture. They don't really try to change it. They're just trying to make money, basically, and so they use the same producers, same directors, same screenwriters as they always have, and it's just part. They're just another addition to Hollywood. But Hollywood, as you say, this is the heart of liberal culture in America. This is absolutely in sync with the New York Times, the Washington Post, and the whole liberal media empire and establishment, and that is what we have to really hit home, that this is a corrupt establishment, that they do not represent reasonable civilized values, and they're just filled with hypocrisy. They are not I've often said too that this whole revolution where we're supposed to take in all these people, this is not motivated by love of humanity. This is motivated by hatred towards white people. And that was part of we'll talk about Weinstein. This revenge motive is really about hatred towards white culture, white civilization, white history. And that hatred is being unleashed from the most prominent, the most, elite institutions of our society. And Hollywood is a big part of that. And, there's huge connections, obviously, between the Hollywood and the rest of the media, whether it's television, newspapers, and so on. They're all on the page with this. And so this is the problem that we face, is really getting our word out. Obviously, Red Ice is doing a great job.
Well, thank you, Kevin. Let's look at some of the images here, because obviously Weinstein has, as I said before, a very powerful connection. Here he is with Hillary, in fact, and what's her name? Abedin, Uma Abedin, I believe, right here. He donated money to her, the Clintons. And I think there was something a while back, whether or not she was going to give back the money. I mean, who cares in a way, but segueing from that.
Clintons
answer,
never give back money. I don't care.
No, exactly. Never. Of course not. No, they're gone now. but the connection here then between the Hollywood interface and Washington, D.C., and there is one actually through that, the sexual abuse and even the pedophile links, which of course also is one of these rumors that have been going for years. There's old Washington Post articles showing how the White House had had call boys and underaged boys visiting, you know, some of the higher ups in the White House and stuff like that. Very, very strange. But I wanted to connect this with Clinton a little bit, Kevin, and talk about what's happened recently with her, because all these accusations that was winged at Trump during the campaign, the election campaign, basically is also now starting to unravel and coming out in the mainstream. I mean, many of us in the alternative, we spoke about this months and months ago, for example, about the uranium deal and the fact that, you know, they were talking about Trump collusion with Russians in the election or whatever. But now it's coming out in the mainstream. Here's Fox News talking about this, that Hillary was overseeing the uranium deal. What is it, 20% or something of America's uranium was being sold to Russia? And while she was heading up the State Department, she was basically in a position where she could take kickbacks, and they were setting up speeches for a bill in the hundreds of thousands, I believe, of dollars. I mean, she was definitely abusing her position, and she's doing the things that they were accusing Trump of doing.
Absolutely. And for me, I mean, when I first heard about this story, I totally believed it, because if your foundation gets $145 million from these executives, you know something is going on. They're not just contributing to charity. I mean, it's just common sense. And so this is a huge story. And despite that, I do see that, like, you know, outlets like MSNBC and CNN are so far soft pedaling it, but this is too big a deal eventually. I don't think they can keep it under wraps. There are two congressional investigations. There's new evidence about the FBI, that the FBI reported on the extortion, the kickbacks, the bribery, and so on. And, despite that, those reports, it came out, they approved this deal anyway. And that means all the people that were involved, Eric Holder, it wasn't just Hillary Clinton. This was really a product of the Obama administration, highest levels. There's a 9-person committee or something like that has to approve a deal like that. Well, Eric Holder was on that committee, the attorney general. Hillary Clinton was on that committee. And those people, had to have known about the FBI reports. It's just absolutely corrupt. I'm just very, very optimistic that this is going to change. People see these liberals think of all this as complete nonsense, that calling Fox the National Enquirer Network, and it's the equivalent of, Hillary has this alien baby kind of story. I mean, that's really, I've seen that. But this has legs. This has huge legs.
Yeah, it does. And the dossier, for example, that's interesting, too. It came out, including there, that the DNC and Wasserman Schultz have been part of paying for that dossier. Right. And they were basically, as the headline says, they were not honest about actually being involved in making sure that came forth. Even the guy behind it was discredited. And it had the most ridiculous things in it, that he went to a hotel room in Russia, was it, and hired hookers and peed on the bed, like ridiculous things like this. It's like
crazy stuff.
Wow.
And then, the Fusion GPS, the company that put this thing together, they took the fifth when they testified in Congress. They refused to testify, basically. They're stonewalling this. But it's starting to come out. An amazing thing is Hillary, for a whole year, lied about it. She had no idea. This was New York Times report. He said, she would say it so sanctimoniously and so with such conviction. You just believed her that she couldn't have known about this. Now you can't believe she didn't know about it. If they're paying $9 million to this company out of their campaign funds, you know about it. I mean, it's just fails the common sense test.
It feels like one of those classic things, too, that you just basically, whatever you're involved with, you just accuse your enemy of that, and that way you've deflected the whole possibility.
Wow, they did. Yeah, and they might have been desperate to do just that, because if she had gotten elected, this thing would never have happened. Nothing would have come out. And they probably thought, well, she's going to get elected, so no problem. But then when she didn't, they had to go to the wall on pinning something on Trump and take away from this whole thing, get away from it. So this is, I think it's falling apart now, though. I do think that people are starting finally to get it about these people.
Yeah. Do you think
Bill and Hillary, they are evil.
Oh, of course. Unbelievable criminality, and they've been involved in decades, and this, again, is deep ties into the people who are running Washington and controlling things, and Trump, you know, still to this day, I believe that he is a wild card in there, and he was a not intended figure, and although they've been trying to, of course, and successfully so, replacing some of the individuals around him, unfortunately, like Flynn, like Bannon, obviously, you know, getting those people out of there, that's a very... you know, very sad situation, because if he had those people in there, he'd be better off, and they're trying to circling him and doing these things. But do you think that any of this, these stories coming out now, has anything to do with what Trump has been doing on the back end of things, or that he has had knowledge of this and he's allowing the right people to come forth with the information? Because I don't know why this, again, I'm just, why now, right? Why they're throwing these people to the wolves right now. Clinton's.
Yeah. Well, you know, it was reported in that book by Schweitzer, Clinton Cash.
That's right.
But then, you know, he didn't have, I guess it wasn't nailed down. There was that report in The Hill by those two journalists. And they, you know, they had that new information that the FBI had already had information and documents about bribery and extortion and so on. And that really changed the game. Those two people actually be congratulated, because it really, you know, made it very implausible that they didn't know about it when they proved it. Again, I was convinced before, because again, $145 million going to the Clinton Foundation, that's corruption. I mean, what the most fascinating thing about the Clinton Foundation is, as soon as she lost, the Clinton Foundation donations just dried up, because it was never about charity to starving children or whatever. It was always about influence. And, you know, I think that's been exposed now.
Yeah, exactly. Very, very interesting. So we'll see where this goes, Kevin, and what this will mean for the Clintons. I mean, she's been, you know, rolling around with their book deal after the failure of the election, and peddling her book and stuff like that. They've been trying to, you know, pick at Trump in different ways, but I'm just so pleased at seeing that these, you know, the true face of these people are truly coming to light, you know, and I hope that.
Me too. I couldn't be more happier, because, I mean, I just, you know, when you are aware, you're absolutely certain that someone is completely corrupt and she almost became president, you know, it was, I remember all last year, you know, when she was running and doing so well and predicted to win, I just like, horrified that this could happen to our country, that someone like this, I mean, this is the most corrupt thing that's ever happened, as far as I know, $145 million, I don't think that's ever happened before, the extent of this, and how widespread it was within the top levels of the administration. I mean, Obama, they say, well, he may not have known, although he may well have known, because he gets this daily briefing, the agreement to sign the do this uranium deal would have been part of that. He must have known a lot of what was going on. He would have heard about the FBI reports. So he could even involve Obama. That would be fantastic.
That would be fantastic,
you know.
Yeah. Yeah, apparently, hasn't he? He's set up shop now somewhere in D.C. He has this huge mansion there. He's surrounding himself with people that are working round the clock to bring down Trump. And, I mean, look at the desperation of the media also trying to, you know, I get alerts on my phone and I get it from Washington Post and CNN and all this stuff. And it's just constantly, it's about these bickering issues with Trump, you know. Every day, there's tens of
stories. I get the Washington Post email every day, you know, with the headlines.
Yeah.
And it's like they'll have 10 stories, 8 of them are negative stories about Trump, and they're just one after the other.
Yeah.
It's just an amazing phenomenon what the mainstream media is doing with this. I mean,
this is how this is fake news.
It's just like Hollywood. You know, they have been pontificating for decades, you know, this high moral tone, these liberal politicians. And it's so great to see Hillary trapped in a lie about the dossier, being up to her ears in financial corruption, influence peddling. That is so great, you know, because how many times, you know, I mean, Washington Post and New York Times will have stories that they tabulate how many supposed lies Trump does all the time. These are serious lies, and they're real lies. It's great to see the tables turned.
Yeah, Kevin, you remember these? For example, just the Senate intelligence hearing, right? They were going on for months and months, and interviewing people and going after Trump, and say, basically, I mean, I listen to some of these hearings and try to get to the core of what exactly are the accusations, what's at the bottom of it, and it was just so unsubstantiated, and I couldn't really get something out of it. They were talking about maybe and probably and most likely, and you know, they were using these words to create as much as possible of a. I mean, if you weren't aware, if you weren't like actively listening to what they were saying, you just heard like, oh, there were this person traveled there and they were colluding with this diplomat and they were going there and they, you know, it was all there. But what's happened with this now? They said recently before all this other stuff broke that basically, you know, they had hundreds and hundreds of hours of testimony of people talking about Russia, talking about what had happened, all these people. I mean, I don't think that there's a single shred of evidence in any of this. It's just lies. It's just made up. It's just a concoction.
Yeah. It's a concoction, and it's very interesting that Robert Mueller, the guy who's the head of the special counsel on this, that he was the FBI guy in charge when the FBI produced these documents about, you know, Russian bribery and extortion and this agent who now is going to testify. That's going to be fascinating. This agent who's prevented from testifying by Eric Holder, by that Justice Department, he is not going to testify. This is going to be just mind-blowing when that happens. But, yeah, I mean, this you know, Robert Mueller is up to his eyeballs in his own scandal, really. I mean, if he was involved in that, you know, he knows darn well what happened, you know, behind the scenes with this uranium deal. So why are we going after Trump? Shouldn't we go after Clinton?
Yeah.
There's where the hard evidence is.
Definitely. Yep. It's just a big deflection, I think. That's what it is. Keep people, you know, focused on that and occupied on that. And it works because that's how the media really operates. If you just randomly talk with people, you know, it's like, oh, well, I'm very concerned about this, you know, Russia thing with Trump, and that's no good. And, you know, they don't have the time to really look into it and investigate and, you know, read and go to the bottom of it. And I think it's about just creating enough smoke so that people believe that there is a fire. That's what I think it was about, to be honest.
And I do think that it would be great if they appoint a special prosecutor for this uranium deal. Because that would sort of counterbalance this Mueller thing that I know Trump really didn't like. He was furious at Sessions for recusing himself. And so then you have this guy Rosenstein appointing Mueller. Well, Rosenstein is also involved in this. He was, you know, like deputy director of the FBI when these FBI reports came out. He knew darn well that the Obama administration had, you know, that they were, you know, responsible for this scandalous thing that happened with the uranium deal. And so he is the one then appointing someone to investigate Trump. He knows darn well this Clinton and the Clinton Foundation, the Obama administration, that's the people that should have been investigated.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I was watching the Sarah Sanders press conference from the press secretary talking about that. He says, if anyone colluded for a foreign government, in last year's election, it was the Clinton campaign, you know, with Uranium One. There's a clear tie to Russia in this regard and her interest in it and what the favors that she was granted and stuff like that is absolutely amazing. But, you know, I, as you say, I think it's going to fall apart. I think there are a lot of things that are coming out and coming to the surface right now. And in extension to that dialogue, if you will, that line of thinking, Trump just today, Thursday here, the 26th, was talking about making the opiate epidemic, declaring that basically like a national health crisis, you know, and this, of course, has been a very important aspect to make sure that people are starting to just know just how much damage this has done, you know, to people. And one of the interesting things here, too, is that the OxyContin and all that stuff, there's families out there that are making literally billions of dollars. I think one of the rising stars, if you will, on the Forbes 500 richest families list was the Sackler family, who raked in a $14 billion. I don't know if that's just that one year or in total, but an incredible amount of money to push oxycodone and other kind of these opioid medications on Americans, who later, of course, becomes dependent on these drugs. They become addicted to them. They go over to fentanyl or other illicit drugs to kind of make sure that they can feed this addiction that they have. But what do you make of this? And the Trump is declaring this kind of like an emergency situation. Is that going to change anything? Is that going to change the situation?
It is an emergency situation, but deaths from opioid poisoning are continuing to rise. Saw a chart today, 65,000 at a rate of now 65,000 a year. Last estimate I heard was like 60,000 a year, so it keeps increasing. This is really entirely the fault of the Sackler family. And what's amazing here, this was something that recruited the whole medical establishment. They commissioned these fraudulent studies that saying that OxyContin, you could give it for minor pain. And so they had, it was a Jewish MD who did this study, published it in a medical journal, and they said that there's only 1% risk of addiction with oxycodone. That is ridiculous. And so and there are other people who are promoting this. So, if you're doing something like oxycodone, you can't just, sell it. You have to have the medical establishment on your side. And that's what they were able to do. They paid these guys to do this research. And a lot of it was completely fraudulent. And then they had incredibly aggressive tactics going out to doctors and convincing them that this was just fine. So you have a backache or you have a headache, take OxyContin. Whereas before, OxyContin was used for severe pain after a surgery or something like that. You would, or maybe terminal cancer or something, you would use that. But you don't use it for a backache. So they started prescribing it like candy. And then people start, they would crush the pills, inject them. They would start using other drugs like fentanyl and other opioids that are even stronger and worse. But this goes back. These are the pioneers. These are the people who did it. And if without them, it never would have happened. Other drug companies, stepped in afterwards. They started, imitating that. But without the Sacklers, it never would have happened.
Very interesting, and as I said, they made billions on this. And as Trump was talking about this today, he was talking about, that he wanted to get certain drugs removed from the market. And he, in the press conference, he didn't mention it by name. I found out it later from the Fox reporter. And I was hoping it was going to be oxycodone, but it wasn't, unfortunately. I was hoping that somehow he knew that these people have been pushing it in this way and making this kind of amount of money on it, and therefore that is enough reason to get it off the market. But he was talking about Opana, I think it was called. Yeah, Opana. And there's some articles going back to July about that, how the FDA is asking those drug companies to pull Opana just because of its tremendous addictive qualities, apparently. And Trump was talking about basically moving towards non-addictive kind of painkillers and stuff like that. But I mean, again, how I'm frankly, personally, very, very conspiratorial when it comes to these things. Not only money, but I believe it's, these are inhibitors on people who are getting pills by doctors and the big pharma, as they call it, the big pharmaceutical, industrial complex, as it were, that are making billions on prescribed medications. Billions. And America is one of the hardest hit when it comes to prescribed medications. And I think there is a whole engine and a money machine behind this. What do you make of this, Kevin?
Absolutely. And one of the most interesting things is this did not happen in Europe because they did not have this push in Europe. They didn't have the cooperating pharmaceutical companies. They didn't have the cooperating government regulatory bodies. And this had to be approved at all levels. And so you had the FDA involved. You had the big drug companies. And I'm shocked that they didn't go after the products of Purdue Pharmacy specifically. I think I never heard of Opana. But oxycodone, OxyContin, those are products of Purdue Pharmacy. And they are being sued by a lot of attorneys general of the different states. Kentucky, for example, I believe Ohio, where they had this huge problem. So they will pay financially, but darn well, they'll still end up with billions in the bank. They've already paid a $600 million fine to the FDA for you know, misrepresenting the sales pitch.
And this is the thing. They just keep paying the fines because they still make enough money on it. And it just continues.
Ticket.
Yep. It's amazing. And no one does anything about it. And therefore, I hope that the Trump's making this an emergency issue can issue specific legal remedies to try to go after these people that have done this, that have pushed this in this way. And I mean, a classic example here is, let me show you like a picture here of some of these like young mothers that are, it's so addictive that I won't say that it isn't their fault, but again, there's many reasons. We've talked about dispossession. We've talked about losing jobs as a reason for why people get depressed and ultimately get on these pills and stuff, right? But there's like scenarios where young mothers literally with their 3-month-year-old baby in the backseat are like closely ODing in the front seat of their car. And I mean, it's just such tragedy, you know? And these families should be held responsible, if you ask me. The Sacklers, you know, these are the monsters behind it.
And this is specifically an attack on our people. Most of the casualties of the deaths have been white people, and they mostly been working class people. It's very, very sad. It's like we should be extremely angry. They should be brought up on criminal charges. Their entire fortune should be confiscated. That's what would happen in a rational society. But what will happen is they will pay these fines and continue. And maybe even they won't admit guilt, because that's what they always do. When they plead out and they say, you have to pay so much money and the ability, even if it was $10 billion, that would still leave them billionaires. You know, I mean, it's just unfathomable. But, you know, unless we change our whole system of justice, it's not going to happen. You know darn well that it all.
Yeah, exactly. In 2007, as you said here, Purdue Pharma, which is owned by the Sackler family, was fined $600 million by the federal government for lying to doctors about the potential of patients to abuse oxycodone. No members of the Sackler family were named in the case, though, so they got off scot-free, of course. But again, as you said, they pay that, and then they just move on. Everything is nice and dandy. Who cares? We just continue business as usual. So, huge problem.
They make $10 billion and pay $600 million in fines. I mean, what's the problem?
Yeah, exactly. The risk-benefit analysis is pretty easy to figure out at that point. So that's a big one, which I hope that we can see some remedy to, and I hope that Trump takes this. I believe he takes it seriously. When I listened to the press conference, he and of course, the First Lady seemed very dedicated to the issue. And they even talked about babies, for Christ's sake, that were addicted. They were coming, what do you call it? They had withdrawal symptoms as they were being, after they were born, because the mother had an addiction. I mean, it's terrible stuff here, terrible stuff.
And these people, they're philanthropists, right? They're donating wings of museums and medical schools. And they're seen as these wonderful people. That's the sad, sad thing. They are criminals, and they should be put away. It's very sad.
Definitely. Well, in some positive news and good news, though, Kevin, I did want to show some footage from the border wall, the prototypes. It's actually 8 of them so far has been going up on the San Diego-Mexico border, and they're being built by, I believe, 6 different companies. They were asked to build some in concrete and some in metal and some combinations. And they are basically, I think they're completed now, and it was somewhat underreported just a few days ago, but now I saw Fox picked it up and a couple other mainstream news sources as well, so it is getting out there now. So I'm sure we'll begin to see the protests or something down there. But, you know, it's interesting because for such a long time we heard that, well, it's not going to be a wall or whatever, and of course Trump asked for $1.8 billion to be earmarked for a down payment to begin the process, and I believe, I don't know if it's the House. I'm a little confused when it comes to the American system. It was either the House or the Senate that did not approve so far the $1.8 billion to begin the process. But I think it's going to go ahead anyway, Kevin. I think the wall is eventually going to be built. What do you think?
I think it will. It's one of Trump's central things. I went to one of his talks, and I think at every talk he said, we're going to build the what? You know, and the whole audience would say, the wall. I hope that they have something. If it's just a wall, they're going to have ladders. They're going to do all kinds of things to get over. I hope they really do a foolproof wall there. There's one of them has barbed wire on the top, it looks like. This is very important. And it's like a, you know, these liberals act, this is the biggest insult in the world that we would do this, you know. And, but it's something that should be done. It's symbolic of nothing else.
Yeah.
We don't want you here. You know, and look at the fence that's there now. Child could get over that.
Yeah, exactly. It was like six feet, they said, or something, or maybe.
Yeah, I mean, it's ridiculous.
And they even just cut holes in it and you just walk straight through.
Yeah.
So exactly, it's. I heard one of the border agents was talking about this, and they said it is a symbolic act, not only to the fact that this will buy them time, but they will get to a point where they basically can, you know, they can do something about it, and they can say to people like, we don't want you. We're setting the foot down and saying, you know, that's it. And of course they can try to find different ways around and get through whatever. And it's still going to be, you know, from our perspective, and obviously I think you agree with this, but it's still an issue of legal immigration being a problem. But this is just a tackle of the illegal immigration issue, which you think would be a very, frankly, it's just a very sensible, sound, centrist position of making sure that the laws of the country is being upheld, right?
Absolutely. I mean, actually, I was very encouraged by a statement I read on Breitbart Daily Caller from the chief of staff Kelly, you know, Trump's chief of staff, that the ideal level of refugees would be between 0 and 1.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that is terrific. I mean, in other words, no more refugees. That's a great start. And, you know, quite a bit of this can be done with executive orders, as Obama did so much with executive orders. I assume that this wall is going to be combined with some surveillance equipment. So if somebody does start scaling a wall, they'll be able to get there.
Yeah, I mean, they have to have a hell of a ladder, first of all, and then some of the, as you said, top rims. Some of them had, some of the designs had spikes. Others had a cylindrical shape, which I guess is to kind of prevent anchors from being thrown over and stuff like that. But even if you make it up to the top, you have to have a ladder to be able to come down on the other side, because otherwise you'll break your legs or neck or back or both. So
well, those are tall. How tall are those?
30 feet. 30 feet.
30 feet.
30 feet. Yep. It was literally it literally got 10 feet taller, I think. That's what Trump said. But so I believe that there is an inspection coming by. I don't know if it's Trump himself. That would be cool if it goes down there and actually checks them out and you know, look at the aesthetics too. Like get a nice, you know, get somewhat nice, right? Not just an eyesore. But anyway, so that's moving forward. So that's very, very encouraging. I think that that's a good development, and we'll see if they can stop him. I think California is suing Trump over this now or something like that. And
oh, I'm sure they are.
Lawsuits running.
State.
Jeez. Yeah.
They're just completely off the rocker in California. I wonder how it can survive.
Yeah, exactly. And you were teaching there for many years, of course.
Many years.
All your career, right?
Yeah.
So you know.
Well, you know, I think over 3/4 of the state legislature is now Democrat. They can pass anything. They have, you know, an absolute majority, a supermajority. You know, Governor Brown is actually holding them in check to some extent. He's sort of a fiscal conservative in some ways. After Brown, I hate to think what's going to happen in California. It's going to be really something.
Yeah, well, maybe it's better that they do, that there is some kind of secession and they can go their own way and see what happens to a certain extent, right?
Because I think the principle of secession is great. You know, then we could have secede and have an ethno-state.
Right, exactly. No, it's remarkable. What do you think, though? We're going to round off here shortly, but what do you think of, I mean, Trump had been trying with the so-called travel ban and different measures with these executive orders, as you said, but there's always some liberal judge, whether it's in Oregon or Hawaii or wherever it is, that pops up and just stops it dead in its tracks. I don't know if you've wrapped your head around that, but I don't know how they do that legally. Like it definitely means that it's not an executive order. It doesn't hold the power that we think it does, right?
Or it discriminates against a specific group like Muslims or something like that. Even though, you know, there are there are a whole lot of Muslim countries that it doesn't apply to. I mean, I was encouraged, actually, the judge from Hawaii has done this a couple times. He was overruled recently by the Supreme Court. So the travel ban, all the challenges against the travel ban have been removed. That is happening. It's an eternal problem, and ashamed to say I live in Oregon, and it's a very liberal blue state, only because of Portland. I don't live in Portland or anywhere near Portland. But it's the big urban areas always that are far, you know, to the left of the average person. That's true in every state. If you look at the state, at the maps of people by the county, you see even in the blue states, if you go outside the big cities, it's pretty Republican.
Yeah, isn't that interesting? And of course, it's white too. That's why it's so liberal. So something to do with
it. Hawaii is extremely liberal.
Is there anything else that you're monitoring right now that you feel is an important issue that people should keep an eye on, developments that could turn in an interesting direction?
Well, let me see. Most of the big stories, I can't think of anything off the top of my head here. But yeah, they're talking about uranium, talking about her lying about the Clinton, about the Trump dossier. Those are the big ones in the regular news. And the Hollywood corruption. There's just a lot of very interesting, important stories. Sometimes, you know, you really feel that we have some serious wind behind us, you know, in this culture war that we're up against. You have the Axel Observer. This is about a law in England where you get 15 years in prison. Now they phrase it in terms of, well, extremism, and they act like, well, it's just is about Muslims or something, but it's not. It's including right-wing extremism. And so, you know, the title, 15 years for reading this. I mean, that's the idea, that reading the Axel Observer or, you know, listening to Red Ice or something like that, that could be punishable in the UK by 15 years in prison. I mean, it's just a police state over there. And it's just astonishing.
Wow.
That this could happen in a Western society that has traditionally been dedicated to individual liberties and freedom. You have, it's not just the UK, it's Germany, and really the entire EU is completely on board with shutting down free speech. And it's all about race and diversity and immigration. Those are the things you can't criticize.
Mm-hmm. But
these are
desperate acts, though, Kevin. I mean, we have to. I agree. It's absolutely horrible. I mean, it's out of control. But surely it's reflective of the fact that they. I mean, if there wasn't a sizable opposition rising to their liberal world order, then surely they wouldn't have to try to impose laws like
that's
this.
Right,
they're
right.
Literally
I
trying
think
to.
They are worried
them.
About.
Yeah, they must be, right? I mean, they're literally trying to scare people into submission of walk away, back away. Meanwhile, of course, we have, you know, Andrei Babis coming into the Czech Republic. You have guy in Austria
very
coming in as well. Very interesting, you know, interesting developments in Europe.
It's very encouraging what happened recently in Czechoslovakia with Babis, because they're going to make a coalition government with even more anti-immigration, pro-traditional culture kind of party. And even Babis does not want any migrant quotas. They don't want migration. They don't want refugees. And that's terrific. I mean, that's if these Eastern European countries could stand up until Babis is taking over here, you know, the Czech Republic was ruled by this sort of, you know, center-left kind of coalition, which, you know, is all in favor of that kind of stuff. So this is terrific, that there be a real bloc in the EU that opposes this stuff. And he's in favor of the EU. I mean, I would be, too, if the EU was sensible. It'd be great to have a pan-European society, organization like the EU. But as it has developed, it is absolutely poisonous. And so we have to push back. So you got Poland and Austria, too. Austria, a major resurgence, of the anti-immigration party. And quite possible that, a pretty strongly anti-immigrant party will be part of the government. So I'm very encouraged by what's happening here. I mean, Austria is a Western European country, really. So this is terrific. Terrific, and things are going our direction over in Europe. And so, when you say that people in the UK are concerned about extremism, they are concerned because they see what's happening in Eastern Europe, and people are really standing up to this insane migration policy that they have.
Well, I don't think they understand that they're pushing people to the edge of. I mean, when you push people into a position where you're dispossessed. When you have nothing left to lose, in that regard, they are responsible for creating a dangerous situation, because people, when they don't have anything left to lose, then things are really going to turn ugly, And part of me thinks sometimes too that, you know, do they have this reckless, just completely over the top immigration policy to almost see who comes out of the woodwork, right? So that they can they can tag him and mark him and brand him and, you know, put them away and almost try to do like a cleansing program of these individuals that have the balls enough to actually speak up against it. I don't know. It goes through my mind sometimes because it seems that it's so over the top. I just don't know.
And they have to keep suppressing information. I mean, I saw something like 95% of the rapes in Sweden are from migrants, 92% in Germany or something like that. I mean, it's just they have to keep suppressing what is happening to their societies. And they have to, you know, I think the EU has guidelines on journalism. When you talk any reference to Islam, when you talk about a terrorist incident, you can't say it has anything to do with Islam. Even though the guy is, you know, shouting Allahu Akbar or whatever, you know, you can't say that. And so, you know, the only way this can be managed is by having a police state. And of course, that's what they're doing. They're doing that in the UK, but that's the only way they can do it. They
that's
can't
right.
do it in a free society.
Yeah.
Because they are, you know, the people there are up in arms about it.
And that's the moment.
Never.
Kevin, that's interesting because that's the moment when a so-called open and liberal society literally turns into an authoritarian, just gulag-generating machine to supposedly keep up with its openness and tolerance. I mean,
exactly.
It's just amazing, isn't it?
I mean, I think that is inevitably what is going to happen to Western societies if this continues. We're not going to have a liberal, individualistic society. We're going to have, and you see that on the left everywhere, the college campuses. They don't want to hear certain people. They'll shout down professors. They'll, they'll go on the streets and beat up people who are on the all right and all that kind of stuff. And you interview them. They don't want free speech. They want people who say they have ideas like us. They want us in jail. They want us in prison, for long periods, just like they're doing in the UK. So, we'll see, but that's the only way they can solve this problem. You know, the more people look around and see what's happening, see their communities destroyed, see, the massive level of welfare use, the lack of involvement in the labor market by these immigrants and refugees. I mean, some huge percentages, I forget exactly what it is, but it's like way more than half, like 80-90% of refugees are not working in Europe. I mean, it's just they're on the dole.
Yeah.
And, they don't have any skills. What are they going to do? You bring somebody up from Africa, they have no education. What are they going to do in Europe to be economically beneficial to Europe? Nothing. And they're single men. Of course, they want sex. But they resort to rape and assault and everything else.
It's not going to end well.
It's not going to end well. It's not. And they're going to have to reverse this. And they can. All it takes is political will. If we had the political will, we could turn this around tomorrow.
Yeah.
It's just that we've lacked it. But you can see things like Czechoslovakia, Austria, Poland, Hungary, they're standing up.
And it will spread eventually to the West. It's just a matter of how late in the game it will be, but it will happen. And again, it is going to be these globalists that are creating this ultimately a division and a disruption internally in some of these countries of civil war similar scenarios here in some of these Western European countries. All because they have some pipe dream, or maybe it is their dispossession of us that's the prime objective. I don't know. I think some of them are probably, they think they're doing the right thing. Some of them are probably compromised. Some of them are probably in on it, and they know that it leads to a replacement of the European native population. But regardless, all of this together, Kevin, is just turning into a witch's brew of chaos, which is down the road. And that's why, of course, people like us say, you know what, you better stop this now, because we don't want this to turn ugly. We don't want this violence that is in the wake of this. It's happened every time in history when these large population movements happen and there's a competition over resources and territory, and it always turns ugly. And if these people knew their history, they would agree with us.
Absolutely. Yeah, it just occurred to me that a theme that really has run through our entire discussion is that the sort of liberal messages that have always been couched in moral terms, people are seeing the hollowness of that. I do think a lot of white people, a lot of Europeans think that they're doing the right thing. Bring in these people. We can help them. They're wonderful people. But they're seeing that's not the case. And we see that, you know, in Hollywood, the hypocrisy of that message. We see people like Hillary Clinton who are pontificating about deplorables and all that. And we see them lying. We see them corrupt, taking in millions and millions of dollars. And I do think that people are understanding this was not about love of humanity. This is about hatred and towards the traditional people and culture of Europe and America and other Western countries. And I do think that Europeans are going to look out at their own continent and see that Poland, Hungary, the Czech Republic, and even Austria in the end, perhaps, if they continue with this, they're going to see that those societies have remained livable. And they've retained a cultural core. And they don't have the massive problems. They don't have concerns about free speech and so on because you have to clamp down these bad ideas from the right. And they're going to realize that they made a massive mistake. And it can still be undone. It's harder and harder. The longer it goes on, the more cataclysmic the reaction has to be. But, you know, there's going to be a reaction. I mean, you can't, especially when some societies are resisting it, we'll see. Everyone's going to want to go to Hungary or Eastern Europe somewhere. God knows that. You know, who's going to want to live in Sweden or UK or Germany? Right? It's horrible.
And once that core population is out, well, I mean, it's just going to collapse in on itself. It's not going to be able to sustain itself economically, and it's going to be turning really ugly. It's horrible, absolutely horrible. But Kevin, before we round things up here, give us the details on what the work is that you're doing over at the Occidental Observer for any newcomers. Tell us about the books that you have out there and whatever else that you want to plug here before we round up, Kevin.
Well, yeah, I appreciate people taking a look at Occidental Observer. Tobias Langdon is a very regular contributor. He writes about the UK. And, in my view, the Occidental Observer, I've always had the philosophy that, you know, the problem that we face is international. So I have a lot of articles on the UK. I keep up with that. I have like two or three writers that write exclusively about the UK. We continue. It's great to see, Edmund Connolly, back. The article we had just before this was by Brian Christopher Sawyer on the Holodomor, you know, which is in the Ukraine, which is a horrible genocide. And it's one that's not trendy, shall we say.
Discussed.
We haven't had 85,000 Hollywood movies about the Holodomor.
Mm.
We have had no movies about the Holodomor, and so this is the first one. It pins the blame squarely on Stalin and the communism. It doesnn't talk about the role of these Jewish operatives like Kaganovich. But yeah, I can certainly live with that. It just get that word out that of how oppressive communism was, especially when you see these Antifa going around with hammer and sickle flags and so on. This was a huge slaughter, 20 million people in the Soviet Union murdered by their own government. I mean, that has never happened.
It's an amazing story, and it's shocking that there isn't more details about it. But again, it's a big machine of cover up for these Antifas and all these people. Yeah. There's mainstream media. Even saw like Teen Vogue magazine. Like, what's the Antifa really about? You know, like they're making it trendy, and it's amazing to read this garbage of like. And one of the, I don't want to get too long-winded here, but one of the motivations here is that they say, well, you know, we look at the history of fascism and all this stuff, and that's why we think we can go out and just beat the crap out of these people because we don't agree with them, because it will lead to violence, right? And so this unbelievable contradiction of not only, as you say, that they're holding the symbols and the flags of the ideologies, which is the biggest mass murders through human history, communism.
The biggest one.
I mean, I don't get it. But they don't look at history. That's what they do.
They don't understand history. I mean, they just systematically removed the entire elite in pre-communist Russia, and then they went after the peasants. And that was what happened in Ukraine. It was just just incredible.
Slaughter. Yeah, it's amazing. I cannot wrap my head around it, and I'm not sure I, even when I think about it and really like try to wrap my head around, I can't. These are just numbers, as Stalin said, right?
You know, you can't even imagine 20 million corpses.
No,
can you?
No.
I can't.
No.
You know, that, you know, you think about it, you know, like something three times the size of New York, a city or something, all those people murdered. I mean, it's just unbelievable.
Yeah, yeah.
That this could happen. And all in the hopes of making a better Soviet man. We're going to create
a new man.
You
know, that's right.
They had the ideology that you could kill anybody who opposed it because, you know, that you were doing something that was good.
Yeah, it's a noble objective.
I
right? Yeah, that's it. And it always comes as the road to hell is paved with good intentions. I'm not sure that everyone in
Taylor's book, Paved with Good Intentions.
Exactly. Yeah, that's absolutely right. Yeah, so definitely check that out, folks, if you haven't read that article, Bitter Harvest. We did a review on it on Weekend Warrior 2, play the trailer and stuff. Very interesting film. I'm glad it's out. And also, of course, check out some of the other work that Kevin has behind him, which is, of course, not the least, The Culture of Critique, his seminal, you know, work, really the academic aspect to the underpinnings and the backbone, if you will, to the things that we've been discussing here today when it comes to Jewish interests and things like this, and also, of course, white identity and those kinds of things. But, Kevin, are you writing any? I mean, obviously, you're involved in the Occidental Quarterly. That's another a subscription that you guys have available for people that they can sign up for. We can add links to that, but search for it, if not the Occidental Quarterly. But are you in the process of writing any, are you focusing primarily on articles, or are you writing any new books at the moment?
I'm writing a book. The Occidental Quarterly, the fall issue is out now. It's online. I just proofreading or going over the winter issue. I'll be sending that out tomorrow. But I am writing a book on European origins, and I've decided I've pretty much finished it now. So I'm going to wind it up. The hard part is the European population genetics, really understanding that sort of genetic history of Europe, which is complicated, very complex. But there, yeah, I'm glad you're flashing the Occidental Quarterly. We're very, very proud of the essays there. We have a cadre of very intelligent, well-educated, a lot of professors and PhDs, and other very, you know, very, very well written, very scholarly articles. I mean, they're usually more scholarly than the ones on Occidental Observer, which are more like op-ed pieces. These are often quite long, but they're excellent articles. Andrew Joyce is a contributor. I'm sure you've had him, I suppose.
Yeah, we've had.
Yeah, he's excellent. And boy, what would I do without him? He's a terrific. He's young and he's going to contribute so much in the future.
Excellent. Well, thank you, Kevin. I really appreciate your time. For everyone that's into your work, check it out, The Occidental Quarterly, and then, of course, The Occidental Observer. That's the kind of the main site, if you will. We'll have some of the links to Kevin's books up on the website as well, The Culture of Critique. Thank you for coming on. Always a pleasure. Thank you for your work, Kevin. Keep up the good work.
Thank you. We'll do it again.
Well, that's our show for today. Thanks for tuning in, everyone. We'll be back doing our regular two segments here shortly, you know, for the main radio/TV show. Also, my thanks to everyone that has sustained their membership and everyone that's helped us with donations as well, helping us to stay afloat after the hack. We can't thank you enough. You guys are amazing. Thank you. Much more coming up, so stay tuned. We'll see you on the next one. Until then, have a good rest of your day and take good care.